Good afternoon. Nice to see all your smiling faces out there. As each of the holy days approaches, I like to go back through the God's Holy Day Plan booklet to read through the sections, remind myself why we're doing what we're doing. What's the meaning of these holy days? And so I keep those things fresh in my mind. It's particularly helpful when I know I'm speaking to help as a prompt there. And so on page 40, in the section dealing with the Feast of Tabernacles, it says here, "This feast also reflects the rest symbolized by the weekly Sabbath, and celebrates the great harvest of humanity, when all people then alive will learn God's ways." And they reference Hebrews 4, verses 1 through 11. And so I turned in my Bible to Hebrews 4 and started reading, and I got through halfway through verse 3 before I started thinking. So let me read that to you. Hebrews 4, verses 1 and 2. "Therefore, since a promise remains of entering his rest, let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it. For indeed the gospel was preached to us as well as to them, but the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. For we who have believed do enter or are entering that rest." And then he goes on, and that's where I stopped. See, our booklet says that the weekly Sabbath and the Feast of Tabernacles point forward to the rest that is coming. But then he says that some didn't profit from that. Why is that? So as we approach the Feast of Tabernacles, let's look at what it takes to enter this rest that he lays out before us. Now, to my surprise, this section seems to be a particularly difficult passage in the Greek to interpret, to understand, and to translate into English. So let's go through it phrase by phrase, and then we'll look at some of the points of application that we may perhaps learn from that. The first phrase is here, "A promise remains for entering his rest." Rather than go through his whole argument, I'm going to read you a summary of the writer's thought process here. This comes from the Cambridge Bible for Schools and Colleges, and this is their summary. He says, "The argument of this section is, 1, God promised a rest to the Israelites. 2, many of them failed to enter it." They went to the promised land, they got to the Jordan River, and they said, "It's too much for us." 3, "Yet this rest of God began on the first Sabbath of God, and some men were evidently meant to enter it." If God says there was a rest there, and he said, "In my wrath, they won't enter it," obviously some, at some point, he had intended for them to enter. Point 4, "Since then, the original recipients of the promise had failed to enjoy it through disbelief," or unbelief, as we would say now, "the promise was renewed ages afterward in Psalm 95 by the word today." And the writer here up in chapter 3 references Psalm 95, which says, "Today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts, as in the rebellion." And so the argument there is, this was long after they had failed to enter the promised land, and it says today. So that rest is still ahead. The next phrase, "Any of you seem to have come short of it." Any of you seem to have come short of it. Is that difficult? Well, maybe. When he says you seem to have come short of it, what does he mean? Well, some think that he perhaps is using a polite phrasing, a softening expression, so it's not quite so hard and dogmatic. Another way to translate that could be to be judged or to be accounted as having fallen short of it. You remember when Paul was talking at the Areopagus, he told them that God has appointed a day on which he will judge the world. And so perhaps the writer here is tying in with that, that a judgment time is coming to determine whether those are worthy of entering or whether they have come short of it. Another phrase in here is come short. What does that mean? Well, it could be that we're speaking of a deficiency or a falling short of the target. You know, you shoot your arrow and it doesn't quite get there. That could be what he's talking about, or some think that he's talking about arriving too late. That this promise was made to the Israelites who came out of Egypt, and now it's long past. In that same vein, the God's Word translation says, God's promise that we may enter his place of rest still stands. We are afraid that some of you think that you won't enter this place of rest, that you've come too late, that the promise is already gone, it's past. Next phrase, the gospel was preached to us as well as to them. That the gospel was preached actually is one word in the original Greek. It's evangelized. They were evangelized. That means they were brought good news, just as we were brought good news. Now, it seems likely that that good news was not the full explanation of the ministry and salvation that comes in Jesus Christ, but the good news that they were offered was that rest was coming. They had been wandering in the wilderness. They had been slaves in Egypt, and God brought them out and said, I'll give you your own land, and you can have rest from the work that you had in Egypt, from the slavery that you endured. Next phrase, the word they heard did not profit them. Now, this doesn't indicate that there was a problem with the message. This indicates that there was a problem with those who heard it and who didn't appropriately take it in. So we see from this that it's possible to hear a message, to hear a word, and have it not benefit us, not do us any good. Perhaps you've received a gift of something at some point in the past, and it's a beautiful gift, but it just doesn't serve the need that you have. And so you set it on the shelf and there it stays because you haven't been able to use that in daily life. And it's these here heard a word, but it didn't profit them. The next phrase, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. The question here is, what is being mixed? What is being mixed? Some suggest it's the unbelieving Israelites were not mixed with the believing Israelites. Let me read to you a quote from the Cambridge Bible for Schools and Colleges, and they offer this particular view. It says, there is an extraordinary diversity in the manuscripts reading here. That means a lot of the manuscripts have different wording, and it's hard to get back to what the original meant. They say the best supported seems to be, in quotes, because they were not united by faith with them that heard it. This would mean that the good news of rest produced no benefit to the rebellious Israelites because they were not blended with Caleb and Joshua in their faith. They heard, but only with the ears, not with the heart. They didn't take that message in. They didn't believe it. Others suggest that the faith was not mixed with the word. Let me read to you Vincent's Word Studies. Now, he contradicts the first one by in his first argument. He says, a body of obedient hearers with whom the erring Israelites were not incorporated would be an idea foreign to the discussion. Moreover, in Hebrews 3:16, the writer has declared that there were practically no believing hearers. So if there were no ones who believed, then how could the ones who didn't not be mixed with the ones who did? There weren't any in that group. He says that although the good tidings were announced to them, they did not profit them. The word did not profit them because it, the word, was not assimilated by faith in those that heard. They did not make the promise of rest their own. No matter which view the commentaries hold, they both get back to the idea that it was lack of faith that precluded the word from benefiting those. So let's look at a couple points of application very quickly. There's a rest coming, but also a judgment. There's a rest coming, but also a judgment. The Feast of Tabernacles, we anticipate the blessings that will come when Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, takes over the throne of this world. People begin to live by the laws that he has put in place, those laws that engender peace and prosperity and blessings. The saints of God also anticipate the change from mortal to immortal. We've just gone through the Feast of Trumpets, when that trumpet sounds and we shall be changed, it says. But also understand that we're being judged now. When Peter wrote, he said, judgment is now on the house of God. So a rest is coming, but also a judgment. Another thing that we can learn, faith should lead to action. Faith should lead to action. In English, we use a prefix, a, to mean not. You've heard that before. Something might be typical or atypical. And sometimes that's a little different. For example, normal and abnormal. That a means not. Well, it's the same thing in Greek, surprisingly. And the word translated faith in verse 2 and believed in verse 3 and even obey back up in chapter 3, verse 18, they're all the same root word, which means to persuade or to convince. The word translated unbelief in chapter 3, verse 19, and also disobedience later on in 6 and 11, it's the same root word with that A in front of it. Not persuaded, not convinced. And there's enough evidence there in that word that in many places it's translated obey. You see, faith and obedience go together. Faith should lead to obedience. And later in this letter, the writer goes through the hall of faith, as we sometimes call chapter 11, the faith chapter, and he references those who lived by faith. And he says, by faith Abel offered. By faith, there came an action. By faith, Noah prepared. By faith, Abraham obeyed. And it's that faith that leads us to action. Faith should lead us to action. Another point to consider, it's possible to be unchanged by the Word of God. It's possible for us to sit in services here each and every day that we come and not be changed. Many who left Egypt were not changed by the word that they heard. They were instructed to put the Passover lamb blood on the door, and they did so. They walked out. They left Egypt with the company that left. They walked through the Red Sea. When the pillar of cloud moved, they moved. When it stopped, they stopped and camped. But they didn't believe God. As we said, they got to the River Jordan. And God said, I'm leading you forward. I'm leading you through. But they stopped. Their faith didn't lead them to action to go through. Because they didn't believe what he said. He said, I'll give you this land. It'll be yours. I'll drive out the inhabitants before you. And they looked and said, I don't see how that can happen. Same way with us. We may sit here in church. We may come to the holy days. We may hear the words of God preached, and it may do us no good. It's possible to stand up here and to preach these words and to think that just because I've said them, I've lived them. And that's not necessarily the case. We have to approach these words in faith and allow them to change us. When we're at the feast, we've often heard the question asked, why are we here? Why are we here? Some have jokingly responded, because we're not all there. The words that we hear at the feast, and we're going to be fed spiritually day after day after day, message after message, and they can become useless to us if we aren't changed by them. If we leave them up on the shelf and not bring them down and use them, allow them to change us on a moment-by-moment basis. Faith is believing that God will do what he said he would do, and then living accordingly, actions following those things. At the feast this year, let's look for those messages that speak to our need to change, our need to grow, our need to move forward, to follow wherever God is leading, and then put those into our lives and allow them to change us. Let's allow ourselves to be changed by the word.